is October 13th. This is Shirley Bradley. I'm at the Orioles Museum, and I'm going to be talking with Noel Johnson about his real motor car memories.
I may not remember everything, but...
Oh, don't worry about it. Just whatever, okay. You know, comes to your mind. And you don't. We don't have to stick to the questions either.
No,
just whatever,
right.
Something occurs to you, just, you know,
okay.
Shout it out.
To start out, you know, I went to school at Middleton Perrington, which is Fulton. And I used to live out in the country. I rode a bus into town for kindergarten through seventh grade, I think it was. Then we left the farm. My dad was working for another guy. And so we left the farm. My brother bought a house in Middleton, and we moved into Middleton. And I finished out my school's years in Fulton. And during that time, I met my wife. She was on the north end of town, and I was on the south end of town.
And so you must have gone to the middle of town.
Yes, we did. They had what they call a ground observer corps back in 55. Ground observer corps was something that the volunteers would go up on a roof, which they fixed up a roof right there for us to do that on. You would watch for airplanes coming over.
Mm.
And you would try to guess what kind of a plane it was, how high it was, and the direction it was going, and the time of day or night. And we would call Grand Rapids and then notify them that there was a plane in that area.
Hmm.
And that's what our job was to do.
That was the Cold War then, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's how I met my wife.
She was an observer also?
She was one of the observers, and her dad and another guy was the one that got her with this one evening. And then when we closed up, because they only, you know, school years, we had to close at a certain time, you know, so we'd go home. So all three of us rode on my scooter, and I took her home. So then that kind of started things off.
And
that was in 55.
Oh, that's neat. That's a neat story.
So after I finished school in 57, I worked for the Shady Nook Farms for a little bit there, which was poultry and eggs. Plant, and my girlfriend was one of the people that was working there, and I would ride out on egg routes with him, and whatever. I got a little money in my pocket then, but I had went to different, I had done different jobs through the high school years, and in fact, I just lost a good friend of mine that I worked for out on the farm in 55. So anyway, one day, my brother-in-law, Byron Campbell, was working at Diamond Rio. And he called me one day and wanted to know if I wanted a job. And I said, yes, you know, at the Rio. And he said that they were hiring because they got a new military contract and they were hiring more people. I said, I'll be down there. So I'm not sure what day it was. I went down, it was probably on a Friday or something, but I do remember the day I got hired in was September 2nd, 1958. And so that started my career with Rio.
And what did they have you do? What was your first job
there? My first job was running spot welders. They would be on a balance wheel, and we'd just, you know, put the parts together, and it was on military trucks that I was working on. And I would help other people assemble some of the parts too, plus I had my own duties to do, which was putting parts in this fixture and then spot welding them.
And this was part of the wheel?
The what?
The what you were spot welding.
No, it was, what these were was the cab, up in cab build.
Oh, you were working in the cab portion.
Cab build, yeah. And we built up the, what they call the cowl.
Oh.
And a firewall.
Cowl, the firewall.
Cowl, firewall, and doorpost. I put those all together.
Oh, I see.
And then I helped another guy, which was kind of a German, had a German accent. And anyway, he was a real nice guy. But I'd help him put it into another fixture, and then I'd go back, start all over again.
Now, when you say fixture, you mean the frame of the cab. That's the fixture?
The fixture means a four-post thing that you would put your parts into, and then clamps would come in and clamp it in place.
Oh,
and then
okay.
They do some more welding on that.
Oh.
That's a fixture.
Did you know how to weld, or did they train you to weld?
The weld, all you got to do is a spot weld. It's nothing more than two points coming together on the metal. All you do is push a trigger and
weld. Oh, I see. Okay.
And that's all it is.
Okay.
And so we did that for, I'm not sure how many years I was doing that.
What department would that be?
That would be 115 cab bill. And that was up on the third floor.
Up on the third floor.
And later on, I got reduced from that job because of just by all the factories, you never get put on one job and stay there the rest of your life. You're always being moved around, especially if you got low seniority. And so I ended up over on the call, another moving line that the cabs would sit on a dolly and run down a track.
Mm.
And there was numerous little jobs I had to do there. I had to help a guy install some bolts along the bottom. I'd have to lay on a creeper.
Oh, underneath, you're working underneath.
So, right, I'm working over my head with an air wrench to tighten up the bolts. And then we would, the next step up would be to put the drip molding on the cab.
The what?
The drip mold.
Drip mold?
Yeah,
okay.
Just above the door. It's a little trim that they put on to let the water run down.
Oh, so it doesn't come inside when it
Right,
runs.
So we weld that on. And then from there on to the next step would be to hang and line the doors. Now, the doors were brought to us by a stock chaser. They were in a rack. We'd have to take them off the rack, put them on a suspended hook, which was the automatic balance pulley, and then we'd line it up with the door post, put the screws in, and you could position it to where you could tighten those up, and then you'd have to line it. In order to, and then we also did the commercial with the, you know, the regular truck cab. That was the commercial, along with militaries.
Mm.
And I'm not sure how many we could run in one day, maybe 13, 14 cabs.
Was there a difference between the doors and what on the military as opposed to commercial?
Commercials were the regular doors, you know, that had the window in them. And there was a framework, you know, the round, just like it is on the trucks now.
Okay.
The military was nothing more than a square box, rectangle box, I should say. And that was all that door really consisted of, because they were like a convertible truck. They didn't have a hard top over the top of the cab. There was a canvas top that they put on. So the door was made differently.
Hmm.
That was made out in the other room. And they, like I said, they put those in a rack and bring them out to us. And so they would intermittently put these military truck or cabs in with the commercials.
Oh, so they were both coming down the line.
Yes, we ran both of them down the same line.
Oh,
at the
so
same
you
time.
Reached for what you needed,
right.
For which door.
Yeah, and so that, in lining the door itself was quite a feat to
was
do.
It? Was it?
But once you learn how to do it, it wasn't that bad.
Was it heavy to pick up and take off that rack?
The military door weighed quite a bit.
Did it.
And put it in a rack and the hook from the balance wheel. And the military, like I say, was a rectangle door. So in order to line that up right, we would have to use a screw jack that they made for us. You put it in there and you force the door opening.
Oh.
Open one way or the other to allow that
so
door
you're
to fit.
Actually stretching that door frame so that that door is going to fit.
Right.
Hmm.
And the same thing with the commercial. Now, the commercial, we used a different type crank, you know, jack at it to open it up so we could fit that door.
That's interesting.
And you had to do all of this and then get back and work on the other ones yet.
And
but the line moved fairly slow.
Did it?
So
I was just going
to
ask
you. So you was able to do this.
Hmm.
It made you work a little fast at it, but time went faster when you were busy.
True.
And there was, we did all three of those operations, but if they would step up the production, then some of the parts would positions would drop off down to somebody else, so you wouldn't have so much to do. But when it got down to when it was going slower, because this is like any other industrial place, we didn't run the same amount all the time.
Oh.
And
different production figures?
Yeah.
Per day or
so,
whatever?
Yeah. So we would run, like I say, 13, 14 cabs, commercial cabs, and maybe about the same of military
in a day.
In a day. 8-hour day. And so that was what that consisted of. And then if production got down low enough, again, to where they would start moving people, then I got transferred down to the main line. That was down on the main floor. Now that line, what I had to do there was build up gas tanks. Now what I mean by building up gas tanks is I had to take a little plate out of the top of it and put a sending unit in.
A what?
A sending unit for the fuel tank.
Sending?
Sending unit.
Sending unit.
And then pick up the tank, which you couldn't pick it up by yourself, but you used a two-wheel dolly, and you wheeled it over to the main line. And it must have been 40 feet or more from where you was building that up, that you'd have to take it over to the line.
Okay.
Now, some of the trucks took two tanks, one on each side.
Oh, saddlebag-like.
We had what they called the saddlebag tank. That was put on in another spot, so you had to keep track of that cab when it got down to that point, because you used an overhead hoist to put that tank on. You had to drop it in place and start the bolts. Somebody else down the line would finish up. You'd have to run back at the other point and put tanks, like the ones that took it on both sides. You'd have to pick up the tank, because you just leave it there, and you go back and get another one and bring it back. You slip the other one over on the other side of the line, put it up into the brackets that's on the truck, and put the bolts, big long bolts, that they used to crunch it together, more or less, between the brackets. You had to do that on both sides.
Why, you had to hustle.
Yes, you did.
My goodness.
In fact, I had to hustle so once that they didn't have the safety stuff that they have nowadays.
I wanted to ask you about that, so tell me.
They had overhead line tracks, and they had these baskets that would hang down that they would put their, now I'm going to call it a gun, but it's more or less a steel box is what it is. Sits up in that, and that would carry it on down from one point to another, which was down along the main line, and people would get parts off from.
Oh, I see.
It came down so low that I turned on the one time to go back and get another tank, and I run right smack dab into it, and I got a nice scar right there.
Oh, you do, don't you?
Yeah. And then, in fact, that scar was there from a stone my brother threw first when I was a kid.
Oh, and you re-injured it.
Yes, it happened to hit the same spot.
Now, this box that you talked about coming down the line overhead, how is that, 2 or 3 feet wide? Or
I would say it was probably about 4 foot wide, maybe 5 foot long.
Bigger than I thought.
Yeah.
I wanted to knock you out.
It knocked me to the floor.
Do I imagine?
What I did is I run into the platform that the box sits on.
Mm.
But like I say, the safety features that we had in that shop wasn't really up to date where they should have been. But anyway, that happened.
So you're cut and bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
Did they take you down to first aid?
Yeah, I went to first aid. And they just put a butterfly bandage on it.
And said, go back to work.
bet you got a headache.
Yes.
And these boxes were constantly moving.
Mm-hmm. This
with parts, and then you could reach mm-hmm. up and take out what you needed.
It got to another point to where they used a fork truck to pick them up and out of there.
Oh, I see.
But why they chose this area for that the route for that trolley car, I'd call it, to go through, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time,
they figured it was worth.
Yeah,
it was
the only way they could get it there, I guess. Mm-hmm. Our plant wasn't really all that big, so. Anyway, I was on that job for quite a while, and then I had a chance to go back to my old department, which I, yes, when?
Oh, yeah, back up on third?
I went back on the third floor, and I did some work up there. Well, it was the same thing, and that may have been when I started doing the door hanging, because I didn't go back to the first job that I had. And anyway, I went back up there and worked on the same jobs, on the same line and everything, for another period of time. And then we had, they cut back some more where they'd have to put more people on, or more jobs on a person. And so I had to do a little bit of metal finishing, and on top of the cabs. Well, that wasn't all that great, because I never done that before.
Oh, this
is
a brand new challenge.
Yeah, it was a new challenge. And they had a hood that they put over, you could put over your head, you know, so you don't get the dust and stuff. And it had air tube running up to it.
Oh.
And I think the air tube, all it was is from a compressed air system that they had there, because it smelled. You know,
you're underneath that hood.
Yeah. So you got that to contend
with. Did that actually keep some of the, or did you get dust and stuff up in there anyway?
Mm-mm, no, it kept the dust out.
It kept it up
mm-hmm.
pretty well.
Yeah.
Good.
But, you know, you had to smell the compressed air rather than any filtered air that they would use today.
Hmm.
Back then, you know, they'd done what they could with what they
had. Nobody heard OSHA yet.
Yeah, right. There you go. And so, I worked at that for a while, and then we had another cutback, and in that time they put me down in export.
Mm.
Now, export, what I did was build up the wooden crates that we tore. They built the military truck, mm-hmm. which is a deuce and a half.
Deuce and a half,
yeah.
Okay.
A 2.5-ton truck is what they were. They built the truck up, no box on it. All they had was the cab, the frame, wheels, and had it so it would run.
Okay.
And then they would bring it into export and tear it all apart and put it in boxes and send it to, I'll think about it after a while, one of the foreign countries. And anyway, that, I'm not sure how long I was there on that. There again, I injured myself there too.
What'd you do?
On the boxes, they had, when we got the big boxes put together, and
these boxes were huge, must be.
Oh, yes. And they, what they do is they build it up on a conveyor. They put the base on it, put the parts in it, we put the walls up, and the walls is what I built off to the side. Hmm. And we carry them over, set them up, and nail them on.
Oh, I see.
And we nail all this stuff together. Not screws, nails. And then what you put the top on each corner, you would cross a band that was probably about a foot long and inch wide. And it had holes, a series of holes in it. And you would cross them over the ends, and then you nail those.
Around the corners,
yeah.
Put the box together.
But, you know, you got to hold a nail, the one, and hit the hammer. You know, one time my thumb really took the beating. Oh, that hurt.
Oh,
but anyway, that lasted for a while. I can't tell you how long each of these jobs lasted. I was there a total of 17 years.
Oh, you were?
The last 10 years I can remember where I was at. And that was when I, again, from export, I went back to the cab bill. And I was there for a while again. And then they were talking of putting on more people down on repair floor. Repair floor consisted of people putting the trucks back together the rest of the way, because we had, out of the maybe 20 trucks that we built a day, maybe one or two you could drive off the line. The rest of them had to go into a repair hole to have more parts put on it, because they didn't have time to put them on down the line.
Oh.
Or they didn't have the parts to put on. Just like any other industry, they run it so fast, you know, that...
not possible to get every single thing.
That's it.
So they had an area where they would drive the trucks into for this repair.
Right. And the repair floor consisted of quite a few bays that...
just like in a service station where you...
Yeah, they would take, you know, drive down an aisle and then drive it in parallel
into
a bay.
Okay.
Now, they would... I can say that the trucks, very few of them was able to be drove off and be sent out the door. And in fact, none of them could be sent out the door until it got the hood and fender fit.
Till they got what?
The hood and fender.
Hood and fender.
Yeah.
Fit on.
And that was my job.
Oh.
That's what I applied for, see, because they were going to put on some more people doing this, or somebody was leaving or whatever. A job opened up anyway. And so I put in for that. And they kept postponing me leaving the department to go down on that job. And so I finally did get down there. The committee man finally got me down. And, of course, there was a little bit of back pay because they were doing overtime down there, which was another thing I liked to get into. But as the truck come off the line, that would come over and come through two other lines that we had, and that's where we would do the hood and fender fit right after it came off the line. Now we had maybe four or five people doing this. Some of the times we had two people on each truck, one on each side, and we could run a truck through faster that way. But some of the trucks, we had enough bays ourselves, the hood and fender fit, that one person could work on the whole truck doing the hood and fender fit.
Was there a time limit, like there was on a production line to get so many down when you're in repair, or are you just there till it's done? You don't have to have it done, say, in an hour or a day? Or
You mean in the repair floor itself?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I didn't know if there was like a production amount there.
No, because if the truck had a lot of shortages on it, it would take a lot longer to get these parts down to us, and we had what they called stock chasers.
Mm-hmm. You'd have to go bring you something.
And they would have to go get the parts for us.
Mm-hmm.
There was numerous things that we had to do to each one of the cabs, or the trucks, I should say. You can say the diamond reel was hand-built, you know, because of that. I mean, it was not a bang-bang production line thing and it was done when it came off that line. It was not.
Mm.
We had to literally put that thing together with the parts we had.
All the missing parts.
Right. So we're putting it together whenever we got the parts to do it.
So you've got 20 trucks coming down the line that day, and maybe 18 of them need to go into the bays.
Mm-hmm.
Were they stacking up someplace? When
yes. If there was an overrun on them, we had a parking lot that they would take them to.
Okay.
And we had a trucker, a wrecker, I should say. And there was two guys that were in this wrecker. Mm. And they would hook onto the truck, haul
it
outside,
there,
and put it in the parking lot.
And bring it back in when it was when there was space.
And another thing with our trucks, very few of them was built for stock. Very few. Most all of them were ordered. So we had a deadline and a way to get them out. So we had to take them in a concession is what ones go first.
Okay.
So whenever one got done out of one of the bays, whichever one was next in line had to get that one into that bay, and they would have to work that one off.
Because that customer's waiting for that truck. He's ordered it.
And as far as the militaries, they went over to another building, and another guy over there fit the hoods and fenders on that, which I was glad of, because they were harder.
Oh.
Had what they call a brush guard on the front. And
a brush guard?
Mm-hmm. The brush guard goes around the front of it, and that had to be bent sometimes because it wasn't formed just right. And that, everything has to be, you know, for military, it has to be right on the line.
Is that so?
Yeah, and it has to be lined up good.
Uh-huh.
And but this guy was good at it. But there was once in a while, they would have to send somebody else over because he didn't show up for work or whatever, you know. And I'd had my share at it.
And you were hoping he'd stay healthy,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I don't take any time off. Blake, that was his name. And anyway, on the other trucks, there was numerous models. They weren't all the same. They had one that what they call a 990. Now that took longer to build, but to make the hood fit and fit the fenders. And anyway, one person could work on it, but it would take longer.
Mm.
Especially if in lining up the hoods, you have to go from one side to the other. Now this is on the metal hood of the trucks. We started building trucks that had fiberglass hoods, and then there was some of the trucks that took what they called a Royalite. It was a thick material that had a foam in the middle of it.
Like a sandwich?
Yeah, and it had laminations on both sides of that. And that that hood was, part of the fender was attached to that hood, and it would take two people to handle that, to put it up on.
To get it up on
there. Get it up on there and get the pins in, so it would, because that one rotated out so they can work on the engine.
Oh, came out this way.
Mm-hmm. Now, tilted toward the front.
Tilt forward, like on the big semis.
Right. And then we'd have to fit that to the cab, and then finish up with the other part of the fender.
Mm.
And that all took time to do that.
That.
And sometimes you'd have to tilt the cab one way or another,
mm-hmm.
so the lineups would be, you know, you want something like this, one like parallel to each other.
It's got to line up right, or it isn't going to fit.
Yeah, that's right. And it took time to do all of these, so each truck had its own characteristic as to what you had to do to it.
Which, in a way, would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be as monotonous as the same thing?
And I liked doing it. And like I said, I was there for the last 10 years. That's what I was doing.
Oh, did you? Let me go back a minute. Did you have any relatives working there?
My brother-in-law was the one that...
Oh, he's the one that got you in.
He's the one that called, and he set up time with Al Axline, which was the personnel manager.
Paul Axline?
Al Axline. And
he was personnel manager.
Right.
Okay.
And so I went in and talked to him, and...
And you were in.
More or less.
Started Monday morning or something.
I think it was, yeah, something like that. And then...
Do you remember who you worked with in some of the different departments, like working with or foreman of? Or?
Okay, the first foreman I had was Vance Disbro.
Vance Disbro. D-I-S-B-R-O-W, something like that.
Vance, yeah.
I say this because people are going to be listening to this and try and typing it, so okay. I try to get the names.
Right. And so...
Clear.
Some of the people I worked with, John Zaylight was the one that had the German accent. Actually, he was from the country next to Germany.
Hmm. Austria, maybe, or something.
Lebanon? No, I wouldn't be Lebanon. I don't know what it was now. But anyway.
At any rate.
he was a good worker.
And what was his name again?
John Zaylight.
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 Z something.
With a Z, yeah.
Okay. Zaylight, okay.
And so, another guy that I worked close by was, okay. Names I got to thought and think
about.
Oh,
that's okay. I just...
Alan McAtee. You may know him. I don't know.
What's his name?
Alan McAtee. They call him Stub.
McAtee.
Uh-huh. Do you know in the JCs that was involved in the JCs around town here? He's a friend of Bob and.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Smith. What's his first name again?
Alan.
Al McAtee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Vance Gisbrough.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Vance's name before from probably somebody else that worked in there.
He was kind of an ornery guy to work for, but he was a good worker, good foreman.
Good foreman. He was fair.
Yeah, most of the time.
Okay.
When his neck got red, look out.
Oh, is that right? His blood pressure was rising,
yeah.
And everybody scurried away.
Yeah. But I liked him. And you know, if you like the person that well, you know, you're going to do more for
you can,
them.
And you can go with the flow.
Yeah.
You know, if something happens, you understand.
Yeah.
What were kind of working conditions? You talked about the box, you know, some of the safety issues. I'm thinking of safety, what kind of brakes you got, what kind of shift you worked.
Okay, well, we had, I was on days.
Okay.
You know, we had a day shift.
Days were 7 to 4 or something? 8 to 5 or 8 to 3?
7 to 4:30, I think.
7
it was.
To 4:30.
I think so. We had half-hour breaks, lunch break. Either 12 or 15-minute breaks.
In the morning and
morning
in the afternoon.
And
was there a room nearby where you could go and eat, or you went to the...
Yeah, it was more or less our same department we were in. Had picnic tables set up on the side.
Oh, so you could.
Plus we had a locker room that you could go back and sit and relax that too.
Place to put your
stuff.
Yeah,
we all wore coveralls.
You did.
Because
and heavy shoes, I imagine.
Yes.
Safety.
Yes, I did get some safety shoes.
They have a toe cap or something.
Mm-hmm. Steel toe.
Steel toe.
Yeah. Especially working around those doors, they wanted us to have.
I would think so.
Yeah,
because golly,
you drop
one of those slipped.
Yeah. And so, some of the other guys, there was quite a few of them in that department.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Did they have two shifts? They had a
no,
night shift?
Only had
just
one.
Just a day shift.
The only two shift place they had was in the press room, which was over in another building.
Oh, okay.
And that was the only ones that they run a two shift that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah, I know they didn't in the rest of it.
Can you remember what kind of wages you earned when you started in and when you...
$2.50 an hour I started out with. Yeah, I ran across some of my check stubs here a year or so ago.
Is that right? $2.50 an hour.
Yeah.
Now, was that your starting when you first hired in?
Yeah.
And what was it when you left?
Around $8
or $7
yeah,
an hour.
I believe so.
And you were there 17 years.
Mm-hmm. And they were close. We were close to GM's contract, you know, the wages and the benefits. So,
that's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Benefits.
It was the same. Benefits, I don't really remember what benefits we did at Northern. We had
some kind of retirement benefit you were paying into.
Yeah.
And you had help?
Yeah, we had health insurance. Yeah.
Everything was handled through the Rio if you got sick and had to go to a doctor or got hurt?
Well, I think it was, you know, I'm not sure if it was Blue Cross Blue Shield that we had. It seems like that's what it was.
Hmm.
But I know I did have some insurance.
Some kind of hospitalization.
Yeah, right. And, of course, we had our pension benefits because I did get some out of that.
Did you? Did you, speaking of pensions, makes me think of the end of Rio. Were you there when the shop closed?
Yes.
Did you know it was coming?
Partly. We were hoping that somebody was going to buy it and take over and run it. The buildings were kind of more or less condemned because the roofs leaked like crazy. They had people in there in order to fix the roofs, but they just didn't last.
Just like patches on patches.
Yeah, well, they went right ahead and done the whole roof, but you know, still later on it would leak some more. Frank Caprett, when I first started working there, it was White Motor Company.
Okay.
In 58.
It was, okay.
White Motor Company. And then a little later on, they bought Diamond T. And so they didn't use the Diamond T name, although it was the real. Now, this is my understanding of the whole thing.
Okay.
Maybe somebody else has another story. But it's the White Motor Company owned the Rio. That's where my paychecks come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they bought the...
And then Diamond T, they bought Diamond T.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason, how they come about getting the Diamond Rio, I'm not sure, but that's what it ended up being, Diamond Rio. And even after that name come about, we had quite a few of the trucks that came through with different names on them.
Oh, you did?
They had what they call a Rogue, for one.
Rogue?
Rogue.
R-O-G-U-E, Rogue?
I think so.
Okay.
And that, if I believe, remember right, that truck was similar to what you see out on the road now that Granger has to go around picking up.
Oh, big ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, see, what we built was the cab and the frame and
then
the wheels.
Could put
and they put whatever kind of box they wanted on the back of them.
Okay.
But anyway, the Rogue was one of them. The Raider, which was one that used the Royal Light hood and fenders. Then it was the Diamond T. I think I'm not sure if they used the Diamond T after they bought it. I think they did. But anyway, then there was the Diamond Reel.
Okay.
Like I said, I can't remember all of the models that they had.
Were there in between contracts, were you laid off between a military contract, or did you have enough commercial to keep?
We had commercial stuff.
You had enough, so you didn't get laid
off. And we had enough. I don't know if there was much time spent between the contracts. We did have different contracts that we fulfilled.
Good.
We had lost my train of thought there.
I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you.
No, that was fine. I don't think we was without work. I don't remember having any time off, you know, because we didn't have the work.
Okay.
There was always something.
Because I know the military contract would end, and I just didn't know what, but the commercials took
over. We almost had another contract to take right over on it.
Mm.
Another thing was about the contract of the military, is when Frank Caprett bought the place,
mm-hmm.
and he was going to make a big deal out of it, you know. He was going to make it real nice place and all that. Well,
he had good plans.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work. All of a sudden, we got notices from the bankruptcy courts that they were going to foreclose. The reason was for closing was Caprett. This is my estimation. This is my opinion. Caprett took the money off the top as he was making it, and never paid his bills because the place went in debt $43 million in 1975.
$43 million.
So we had a lot of trucks out in the parking lots. Besides, we had the military contract, and that was a definite had to be done in the military.
Mm.
And so, yes, I was one of the last ones there because we had to run all these trucks through, and I was on hood and fender fit. And all these trucks had to be done that way, plus be repaired. And the hood and fender fit was done on the repair floor.
Did you have enough parts to finish these trucks?
Yeah, they had to produce them.
They made the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
we made enough parts,
run out of
most... this was what happened, is the vendors stopped sending parts, and that's where the whole thing started into bankruptcy.
Oh.
Because they weren't being paid. But then when it went into Chapter 11, and Chapter 11 is you can continue working at it, but it's still going into bankruptcy. That they were able to somehow send us the parts because we would guarantee them their money.
Mm-hmm. I see.
We didn't bill any more part or any more trucks.
Anything new?
No new trucks. We had to work off what trucks we had out in the parking lots. So we were more or less assuring them that they were going to get their money. And I'm not sure when it did close in 75, for sure, we got a lot of it paid back by, fixing those, getting those trucks ready and selling them.
Mm.
Plus all the militaries, we got those all done. We got those
done. So there's money coming in from those sales.
Right. And we had it almost all paid back, as I understand.
Really?
And that's why we thought, Caffert was out of the picture because he was the one that they foreclosed on. So there was Duncan, seems like his name was, out of Oklahoma, Syria. Him and another person. We thought they was going to buy the place and keep it going.
They had.
You had to have, I think at that time they had to have, I don't know if it was $12 million or what it was in capital.
In order to.
Whether they couldn't come up with the money or what, I don't know. The last day that they had the courts down in Grand Rapids, any of us was able to go to it if we wanted to.
To the hearings?
Yeah. We assured ourselves that these guys were going to step forward and take over. Didn't happen. And the judge asked if there was anybody, wanted to buy it, take over on it. Nobody stepped forward. So, of course, they have liquidators there, and that's what happened. They got sold to a liquidator.
Sold off everything.
Yeah.
You could sell.
And so, we were hoping, and that was in September of 75. That was my last day of working there. And it was after that they had their last hearing. And we was hoping that they would come through and...
Still hoping against hope.
Yeah, yeah. But it just didn't happen. A liquidator took over on it. We were out of a job. Now, the liquidator did have to have a few people, and of course, I don't know how they got chosen to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And liquidate all the parts and stuff out of there.
Pack stuff up.
Yeah. I had a real nice toolbox that they'd made for me, and I had a chance to take it home before all that happened.
And so you got it.
And no, I didn't.
Oh.
No. Because I figured, we had real hopes of them buying, the place and keeping it going. In my toolbox, all filled and ready to go, would be there. Didn't happen.
Oh.
So there was a few of the guys that got chosen to stay and work. And I went back in there the one time. I was able to get back in. They had guards there yet, too.
They did?
Yeah.
Like plant protection?
Security. Yeah. But the one guy...
And they wouldn't let anybody in, or...?
Not supposed to.
That wasn't supposed to be
there.
Yeah, okay.
But they did.
But they did.
And I went looking for my toolbox, and I couldn't find it. There was a lot of toolboxes all pushed into a pile, more or less. And I went looking for mine, and apparently the liquidator or whatever, somebody of his regime or whatever, come in there and seen some... toolboxes and stuff or whatever, and they took the ones that they wanted.
Took what they wanted, and yours was one of them. Gee, that represented a loss to you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Not just because it was yours, because it was a good one and it had good tools in it.
But, yeah.
Gee whiz.
So, anyway, well, we,
How'd you make up with the pension then after everything went?
Okay, the pensions, through the years, I've gotten with different people. Charlie Smith used to have a secondhand store and bicycle shop down on South Washington. I got talking with him, and he said, I ought to apply for it, you know, get the pension, you take it out in a lump sum. Mm. Well, when they closed like that, the pensions got cut in half, because I knew of one other foreman. He was a general foreman at the time, I believe, in the motor plant. That's where my brother-in-law, Byron Campbell, was a foreman in the motor plant.
In the motor plant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, that's a separate building.
Oh, it was a separate building, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
And so he he'd already been retired.
Oh.
But when they cut the pensions in half, he had to go back to work.
Oh, man.
So he got in the Oldsmobile. I was out 11 months.
I was wondering.
I was out 11 months. I went right down and applied for getting to Olds. I believe it was in, it was September, our last day at Rio. And after that, it must have been about October, November, when they had their last hearing. And I knew it wasn't going to have a job.
Wasn't going to happen.
So then that's when I went down and applied. And I think it was in December of that year that I went down and applied to get into GM.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting for them to call, and they never did. In the springtime, of course, I needed some work because at that time I was drawing unemployment yet. We were able to do that.
Good.
And I had a little side job that I was doing. I don't know if you remember the homemaker shops. Homemaker shop.
Homemaker shop.
That was in the malls.
They
did linens and draperies and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I did their drapery hanging.
Drapery hanging?
Yeah.
Oh, did?
I did that for about 6 years.
Oh.
I'd go out and hang and line drapes.
Yeah, that's a job.
Yes.
I think so.
Some of them got to be a job. But I was doing that on the sideline, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't bringing in much.
No.
So I did apply. Well, it was... Okay. I also got a part-time job at Plywood Sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with
South
them.
South Pennsylvania there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was working with them for a while, too. Well, through all the summer until August. And that's... I had a friend across the road from me that was watching the lineups at GM, because he had an office up above. And he was watching every time they'd have a lineup, you know, at the employment. He would call his wife. His wife would call my wife. My wife would call me and said they may be hiring. So I'd go right down and I'd get in line. And I got up there the one time and they said, well, where's your application? And I said, you've got it. You've already got my application. When do you want me to come to work?
Good for you.
So I don't think it was too long after that. And I got a call one evening and says, you want to still interested in working for GM? And I said, yes. When do you want me? And they said, well, can you be here tomorrow afternoon at 4:00? And I said, sure. So I was there, went through the physical. I was in and out of there in an hour, knew that I was hired.
Great. Oh, that must have been a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have security.
Yeah. So that was in 76. And August 2nd, 76 is when I started working.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you started in Rio, didn't you tell me, on the 2nd?
2nd of September.
The 2nd's a lucky day for you.
I guess so.
Did you get married on the 2nd?
No, 25th.
Well, looking back on Rio, any last thoughts that I haven't even thought to ask, or what kind of place it was to work? Were you glad you'd been there all of your...
Oh, yes. I got a lot of experience out of it. I met a lot of nice people, and I still am in contact with some of them. I don't regret being there. I only wish that they would have continued, because I would like to have had my whole career there.
Oh, I see.
But when I got hired at GM, the jobs I was doing there, I mean, I thought, where the heck have I been, you know? And the money just kept raising, you know, it was getting more and more all the time.
Better benefits.
Right. And getting back to the pension, though, of the Diamond Rio,
mm-hmm.
They was offering some of the people, I guess, I wasn't one of them, that they could take their money in a lump sum.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
And I called, well, I'd send a letter to them or something anyway. I'm not sure what year it was, but they sent me a letter back and said, no, you had too much in there that they couldn't pay you a lump sum, that I'd have to wait until I'm 62. I could draw $69, I think, a month. If I waited until I was 65, I could get $124 a month. And that was the last letter I remember even getting.
Mm.
And so, a year ago, January, my birthday's in January, I got a letter from the Diamond Rio Pension stating that I was approaching 65, and what did I want done with my pension? That I'd start receiving it. So I called them up, and I talked to them, and I says, I'm eligible for the pension now, right? Yeah. Well, I tried getting the whole amount out here a few years ago, and they says, well, we sent you a letter one time that you could have done that. And I says, I must have missed that letter. So I says, well, I'm applying now. Can I take it now? He says, sure. So all the interest that was being paid up all this time, I got $16,000.
Good for you.
So I got something.
Yes, you did. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because not a lot of people didn't that
no.
I've been able to.
But that's...
So all in all, it was worth it to spend most of your working life there, or at least half of it.
Yeah.
The Rio lunches every year, it's nice to see the folks come back together. It's like, when I see it when I'm there, it's like seeing a family come together.
That was the only one I'd ever been able to go to, other than the other ones that, you know, I could have probably taken off time. But I never knew what it was or where it was at.
Oh.
I did know of the one that was out in Coral Gables.
Mm-hmm.
But another guy and myself went out there, but it was right at the tail end of it, and I didn't get to see three of the guys.
Oh, you wanted to see. Yeah.
It was good to see as many people as I did. The only thing was, right after our dinner, you know, the bottom took off and left. Before I could even get around to talk to them.
Yeah, when they're done, aren't they? I think most of the socializing is done ahead of the dinner.
Well, I guess next time I'm going to have to go 2 hours early or
yeah.
something.
Because when I got there, there's a lot of people there, and they, you know, all been
mm-hmm.
having time to chat. But I did notice that when it was over, boy, they were out of there.
Yeah, and I didn't really like it that way because, you know, I wanted to talk to some of them.
Sure you did.
But
hopefully you can go next year. It's always in July.
Yeah.
You're on the mailing list
now. Yeah, she's on the list there now. So.
Well, I sure do appreciate your sharing your memories with me. Is there anything else you'd like to...
I'm just trying to think if there's any other things, you know, the real... there are so many things, you know, I could probably think of afterwards here.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I went through the main things.
Well, I've never... interviewed anybody before that did the jobs that you did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And just your overall impressions and your the aftermath with you getting your pensions. This is all interesting. It's all part of the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you made enough when you worked at Rio to raise your family and have
mm-hmm.
a nice house.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I had a English Austin car when I first went
there. Oh, an Austin.
Yeah, English Austin.
Uh-huh.
When I first started working there.
You did.
And it was a little convertible. Of course, it wasn't all that good of transportation, so... And I lived up in Middleton, and I had my sister and my brother-in-law lived out here on Peacock. That's east of Okemos.
Oh, okay.
And I had riders from up there coming down and back, you know.
So you commuted?
Yeah. So a little later on, though, I had to get a better car. So my brother ran across a 54 Plymouth, and I bought that. And I sold the little car to one of the guys that I worked with. So anyway, after a fashion, this was in 59, I wanted to get a different car. 57 Chevys was really a sharp car. That was a used car. And my brother talked me out of buying the used car. He said, well, put a little more with it and buy a new one. So I went looking it on and, you know, wasn't driving around. 59 Fords. The only Ford I ever owned. And so I bought, ordered a new 59 Ford. Two-door hardtop. That was, I wish I hadn't sold it. I wish I would have kept that thing. But anyway, I had that at the time. And about $1,000 in the bank. And I asked one of the guys down the shop, I says, you know, I got getting to the point, my wife graduated at 59, so she was out of school. And so I says, do you think that'd be enough to start a family or whatever? And he says, whatever turns you on, you know, I guess. So
people have started with a lot less.
Yes. And I had a nice car. And by chance, I went, well... I proposed to her probably around Christmas time of 59. And come towards spring, I was listening to the radio, and one furniture store out in the north end of town, Bell's. Bell Furniture.
Oh,
was
yes.
Advertising. Furniture and stuff, you know. So I stopped in there one day, and I got to talking with Ma Bell. And next thing you know, I had a house full of furniture. No house. I told her, I said, if I buy all this stuff, I said, I haven't got a house to put it in. Fix you right up. So she gave me a phone number, and I called this woman that worked for a Long's realtor.
Oh, yes, Gordon Long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they found a house out on the south end of town on Meese Drive, brand new, 3-bedroom ranch, and I don't remember what I paid for it at the time. It didn't have a basement in it or anything, but...
Oh, prefab. Yeah.
No, it wasn't
no.
A prefab.
No, it wasn't a prefab.
No, they didn't have prefab stuff in those years yet. So then in 60... Yeah, it was just finished up and being built. And I borrowed some more money from my brother for down payment and stuff until we got that house. So
wonderful.
8 years later, we decided, well, we need a bigger house. But we got married in June of 60. 61, we had our first son. And then in 64, we had another one. In fact, he was born on my birthday.
What a nice present.
Well, okay.
Of course, you've had to share the...
Nobody says I didn't have anything else to give you. So...
Well, that's quite a gift.
We, Dick Mann, probably know Dick, he lived across the street from, kitty corner from Donna Kay's.
He
used to, anyway, next to the Bob's.
Oh.
Anyway, they were neighbors at the place in the south end, and they 2 years before that, they had built this house out there. And they talked us into coming out there on Evergreen.
By then you were working for GM?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
No? No, no.
No, you were,
no,
still,
no, no.
You were still
right,
at
I was still
Rio.
At Diamond Rio, yeah.
And hoping for a good future there.
Yeah. So, we had a house built out there, and we've been there ever since. It's been over 36 years. So, we've done pretty good.
I think so. And I'm glad that you have. Thank you so much for the interview.
Okay.